Hello, John.
Hey, Drew.
Do you feel like going over a few things?
Yeah.
All right. Let's do that.
I'm John.
And I'm Drew.
And you're listening to The Hourchive,
our ever-growing library of everything, 1 hour at a time. I mean, I've got a list of the stuff that I made notes of.
Yeah, I got a few, too.
But do we have a full list of the episodes?
A full list of episodes.
That we can make sure to have to reference?
Yep, we can do that.
We can do it. This is one of my favorite things to do. I really like it.
You like the addendum?
I like to addendum onto things.
Oh, okay. Like in general or just for the show?
For the show. Absolutely for the show. It's hard to say in general. I never thought about it. It's just as a life sort of application, but...
You think this is a costume? It's a way of life.
but, you know, I listen to the show. Do you listen to the show?
Sure. Occasionally.
And I sit there and I'm like, oh, we didn't talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't, you know, and I know for a fact.
Are you admitting that we're fallible?
Well, we probably talked about it. It just got cut out or something.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
but I know that there are people listening to the show who do the same thing. And sometimes they leave comments. And we've got some good, we actually have a few listener provided addendums here.
Yeah.
Here and there. So that's exciting.
I like that feedback element of it. I like that we get feedback from people.
I do too.
I like it when people call us on things.
Yeah.
I enjoy that.
Yeah.
But I also like when people just sort of chime in and are like, hey, you guys talked about this thing.
Yeah.
Here's what I think about something that's sort of related.
Yeah.
Or here's my experience with this thing.
I really love when we hear from the people who listen.
Yeah.
So please do if you listen and, you know, don't be shy. We want to hear it.
There are lots of ways to reach out to us.
What are the ways?
Connect to us. Well, you could, as we discussed, leave a comment on the website for a particular episode.
That's thehourchive.com.
Right. You could email us.
Yeah.
At thehourchive@gmail.com.
Okay.
You can hit us up @thehourchive.
Yeah.
On Twitter.
Okay.
That's @. You have to say that with a little bit of aggression. @ thehourchive.
There are surely no other ways.
Oh, to say at?
No, to hit us up.
Oh, yeah. No, there's another one.
What?
Yeah. You can go on the Facebook.
Yeah.
You can pretend you're Mark Zuckerface and get on the Facebook and look up the Hourchive.
Yeah.
Now, I think, correct me if I'm wrong here, but you can view our posts and the posts that are on our page on Facebook without being a liker of our page. But I think if you want to post anything on the page, you have to like it first.
I don't know about that. I don't know how that works. But I know that you can look at it.
Yeah, you can definitely look at it.
And, you know, we're posting updates every week when there's a new episode.
And we've been trying, we started off kind of doing this, and we kind of slacked off lately.
Yeah, we're slackers.
Posting, like, related stuff. I have a great one that I meant to post for Halloween, and I didn't, so I feel kind of bad.
We'll post this when addendums goes up.
It could be an
up.
Addendum, yeah.
Yeah. Well, maybe we should be better at that.
Yeah, let's try.
Okay.
So here's our commitment to you. We're going to try to be better about posting more stuff on Facebook.
And you're going to be a more engaged audience.
And you are going to be better. This is the most backhanded a sign of appreciation to listenership.
Sorry.
Yeah, no. We would absolutely love it for you to respond in whatever way. Or the other thing you can do, and some people do this as well, is you can just text us while you're listening to the episode. Or you can start an email chain with us and continue to add to it as you listen.
Absolutely.
We love feedback, so any way you want to deliver feedback, if you want to call us, if you have our number, I think most of you probably do.
Yeah.
If you want to, like, just you're in the middle of an episode and you pause it and you call us and you say, John.
Yeah.
No. And then you hang up.
Yeah.
I'll know exactly what you mean.
Yeah.
And we'll relay it in an addendum episode.
Good.
So, we are a little bit behind
in
our addenduming. We try to do it every 15 episodes.
Yeah.
Now, we purposefully decided to postpone this one a little
not
bit
a mistake.
Because of Awesome Spooky Month.
So, that takes precedence.
Yeah, absolutely. So, instead, what you are going to get is a little slightly extra long addendum.
Yeah.
A wider addendum window for this one. So we're going to cover everything up until the last episode, which was 47, I think. And that would be our Scary Stories episode. And it's starting with episode 31, which was...
Theme parks.
Disney.
Disney, specific to Disney. I got a few notes on this one.
Throw them out.
We went deep on Disney.
We did. I feel like I could have... belabored that topic a lot more.
I wouldn't be surprised if we come back to it for
probably
another episode, but a few things that I forgot to note. One is that I was actually in a parade at Disney.
What?
I think Disney World.
In the Magic Kingdom?
Yeah, maybe.
What do you mean you were in it?
Well... Do they both have a Matterhorn?
No, that's Disneyland.
So I was at Disneyland.
Okay. Don't change the subject. How are you in this parade?
My family, we all went to Disneyland. This is my parents, me, my older brother, and my older sister.
Okay. How old are you at the time?
I don't know. Young. Little kid. Little kid.
Okay. A baby.
Not a baby. By some people's definition, maybe. But I was not a baby. And they wanted to go on the Matterhorn. And if you'll remember in the first episode about Disney theme parks, I relayed the story of my encounter with Space Mountain left me in tears.
Yeah.
Which I also have to comment on. But I didn't want to go on Matterhorn and... My brother elected to stay behind with me, so I wouldn't have to go on. So my parents and my sister go on the Matterhorn. And meanwhile, my brother and I are just hanging out when a parade starts. And we kind of, you know, get up to the front of the viewing, you know, the street, right? It's where you can see what's going on. And as the parade passes by, a woman, sort of, I guess, in a kind of like a belly dancer get up.
Wow.
But I think had more coverage.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of sequins.
So belly dancer, but not really.
I remember a lot of sequins.
Okay.
I remember being, I can actually remember being sort of like excited about, you know, dancing with a lady because she came up and pulled me from the crowd and basically planted me behind her in a conga line.
Oh, wow.
Set up. So I'm right there.
Wow.
And then she goes and grabs more kids and basically builds a train. And I was like, whoa, I'm like dancing.
You were a very
pivotal
piece in that train.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, if you'd let go, the train would have just faltered.
I would have been the engine.
Yeah.
I could have taken control of that train, and I didn't. So then...
You were like the coal car.
Yeah. as it's told, you know, the parade came and went, and eventually my parents and sister came off of the Matterhorn and asked, you know, how did everything go? And Ben was like, oh, Andrew was in a parade.
Did they
believe And they were like, what? We missed him in a parade?
Do you think they regret that? Do you think they ever do. Think back?
They do. And they, yeah, no, I'm sure they
see
do.
The Matterhorn and they just hang their head and cry.
I do. So I also noted here we didn't talk about Star Tours.
Yeah,
I don't want to talk about it.
Okay.
Sorry.
We just want to acknowledge that we didn't talk about it.
Yeah, but I think it'll come in other discussions.
Yeah, probably.
Down the road. There's two more things that I specifically want to talk about when it comes to Disney parks. Is there anything that you...
I got it. Yeah, I got one.
Man, are we going to go for another hour?
Probably.
This?
Probably. No, we won't go for an hour. I'll be quick.
I'll do a quick clarification. So my mother claims I was not in tears in the line for Space Mountain, that they would not have made me ride if I was literally crying.
Oh,
but cool. I remember it differently. But she claims that I was not crying.
Mm.
But I think I was. But I just want
to
get her.
To be determined another time.
Yeah. What do you? I've got one more thing.
Should all right. Well, all I wanted to do was we kind of wrapped up our discussion about like what we like about the parks, right? You know, like our favorite components of the parks.
Did we?
Like that? Well, kind of. I mean, we talked about like our favorite rides and stuff like
that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I wanted to talk. I actually started to do this, and I think it ended up getting cut out.
Yeah.
But I wanted to mention that I'm really excited about where the parks are going.
Oh.
Because I feel like for a period, for maybe about 10-ish years, the trajectory that the theme parks were on, the Disney theme parks specifically, was not necessarily ideal. They seemed to have sort of lost their way.
Yeah.
They were kind of, to use their term, imagineering in a lot of different directions and not really ones that I think were working. So, like, there's this period from the late 90s to the mid-2000s where there's a lot of stuff that gets either built or renovated, retrofit, you know, changed. And the decisions that were made regarding those, I don't think really bore out very well. Hmm. In most cases, there are exceptions, but a lot of things, like a chief example, if anybody is familiar with the Journey into Imagination ride at Epcot, originally was one of probably the easily the most kid friendly thing at Epcot.
Is that and with Figment the dragon
and Dreamfinder, who's the bearded guy who rides around collecting all of this inspiration. And then he pumps it into this machine and it just creates imagination.
Yeah.
Right. So there's it's a really great story. They took this esoteric topic of imagination that's hard to define and they made a really incredible ride that doesn't define it, but, does a very good job of evoking and inspiring imagination, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think everybody, I think I'm right in this. I'm comfortable saying that I'm right in this because I've never heard anybody say they went on that original ride and didn't like it, you know? Now contrast that with, I think it was 97, they closed the ride and they go in and do a complete overhaul of the ride. They take Figment out and they make it this institution-themed ride where you're going on like an open house tour through the Imagination Institute. And it was terrible and everybody hated it.
Yeah.
And Michael Eisner, who was the head of Disney at the time, he came in and he was like, fix this. So they put Figment back in and they still didn't really fix it. It's still a pretty crummy ride. So that's an example of how they kind of went askew, went wayward for a little bit. But starting around, I don't know, maybe 2005, things started to kind of turn back and more of, I guess, the right people were making the right decisions. I don't know. But so what you have now, this year, in fact, in 2012, they finished an overhaul of Disney's California Adventure, which is the second park at Disneyland.
Mm-hmm.
And it opened with much fanfare during that wayward period in 2001. And everybody was expecting it to be this incredible thing. You know, it was the first new Disney theme park in a long time. First one, new one in California since Disneyland.
Mm-hmm.
Big deal. A lot of expectations and it sucked.
Mm-hmm.
It was just terrible.
Right.
It was really horribly executed. And so Disney spent $1 billion and just completely overhauled the whole place.
Wow.
And the signature piece of that overhaul were two things. One, they built an entire land. They recreated the town of Radiator Springs from the Cars movies.
Mm-hmm.
In exact detail. And it's a really incredible job from what I've seen. I haven't been there.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing they did was they added this sort of 1920s LA vibe to the park in general.
Mm-hmm.
So it's less a contemporary evocation of California, which really didn't work.
Right.
They've made it sort of this idealized LA of the 20s, which is when Walt Disney first arrived in Hollywood. That's the connection. And so they now have all of the stores and stuff have this 1920s LA vibe, and they have there's a streetcar that you can ride through the streets. It's, mm-hmm. It just looks really, really cool. So I think I'm very excited about where they are going. And in that vein, I think along with our Star Tours discussion, there is probably a much deeper conversation coming about what may lie in the future in Disney parks. But we'll leave it there.
You got scoops?
Well,
Disney scoops?
I just know that they made an acquisition recently that I think will probably have an impact on what happens in the parks.
Yeah.
Period. Okay. Next slide.
I had my first time that I realized that I was an individual, a unique being, was at a Disney park. Have I told you this?
You've told me this. It's a fantastic story. I think you're about to blow minds.
Get ready. Maybe someone listening will realize that they're unique and an individual as they hear me tell.
Are they listening to this at Disneyland?
I don't know.
They're in line.
Maybe.
Headphones on.
So, summer of, when would you place this, knowing when this ride opened?
89.
Really?
I think it opened in 89 in Disneyland and maybe 92 or 93 at Disney World.
It's 1989, and that makes me about 8 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And all through the year, the Disney Channel has been touting the impending opening of Splash Mountain. The Disney Channel. And
they paid for time on another channel. You guys, we've got our own cable network. No. We want to be on MTV.
So I'm getting excited. Like, I cannot. It looks so cool to me because they're describing, you know, the drop and the water.
It was insane. It was like the ridiculously elaborate log flume ride.
It's
taking something you're familiar with and then blowing your mind with.
It sounded very cool. You know, the funny thing is, and I didn't think about this until just now, that the cartoon it's based off of is somewhat...
Song of the South.
Yeah, somewhat reviled now.
Yeah.
For its unfortunate representations of which, you know, as an 8-year old, I didn't have any understanding of.
Yeah. You actually seen the movie?
It's a collection of.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like
stories.
An anthology kind of. Yeah.
So I've definitely seen the stuff with Br'er Rabbit. And I've seen the one that Splash Mountain is based around.
Okay.
Which, if you don't know, is the story of Br'er Rabbit, Br'er Fox,
and Br'er Bear
and Br'er Fox want to eat Br'er Rabbit. There's various hijinks that take place for them trying to get him. And when they finally do catch him, he's like, oh, you know, whatever you do, just please don't throw me into that Briar Patch.
Please don't put me in that briar patch.
He makes a big song and dance about it. Please, God, don't ever throw me in there. And, of course, they throw him in there. But what they don't know is that he loves it there. It's fine.
Yeah.
And he's actually very safe when he's there. So that's the story. So the ride follows this narrative. At least it was advertised to follow this narrative
right
to me. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be so cool. I can't wait.
And that year, we were going to Disney World?
Land, probably. Landed.
So I was probably eight.
It's a very pivotal moment in your life.
I was probably 8 years old in that.
Clearly left an impression.
In that parade, by the way. So we were going to Disneyland that year. So I'm doubly excited because I'm going to get to ride it. So the summer rolls around and we're at Disneyland and it's finally time and we get in line for Splash Mountain. I'm just beside myself. I cannot wait. It's going to be so much fun. And I'm standing in line, imagining myself standing in line. Like, I'm looking at myself, and I'm thinking, that's me. I'm in line for Splash Mountain. And I had this sudden moment of understanding, this epiphany, where everything, all the excitement sort of dropped away. And I suddenly, I thought about the fact that that's me standing in line, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that's me, and no one else is me. And I'm the only one. That's me. And I had this weird, you know, it was seconds long of just this strange realization that I was an individual and that everyone else in that line was also an individual.
Also thinking individual thoughts.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a big deal for me. And it, you know, after the few seconds passed, I went back to
being very excited. Yeah.
And the ride was incredible.
Yeah.
And it is an awesome ride to this day, in my opinion.
That's a hell of a story.
So that's all I wanted to say about
the
Disney parks for now.
I think that's pretty good for now.
I think we're going to come back to it.
We will be back.
Yeah.
But in the meantime. Addendum.
Addendum. Ka-chunk.
Splash Mountain. It may look peaceful and fun, but the only way out is a long way down. Now open. Splash Mountain. Disneyland.
All right.
All right. Episode 30.
We're not done with theme parks.
No, we're not. Well, we might be. I don't know what you got. I don't have anything for this one.
I do.
Okay. Episode 32 was theme parks general.
Miscellaneous. Yeah. General.
We talked about Universal, Six Flags.
I want to note another omission that we will continue to omit.
Okay.
And that is the Back to the Future ride.
Oh, yes.
Because I believe we will discuss it, but in a different episode.
Yeah. So if you were listening to that episode and you're like, how could these guys not talk about
the best ride?
We actually did talk about it for about a half hour and it ended up being just a little too long. So, but yeah, we will come back to the Back to the Future ride. All right. Is that good for?
Yeah. That's all I had. Addendum.
We're going to addendum that.
Is the next one Summer Blockbusters?
See that list there. Yeah.
I don't have anything here.
Again, I feel like this is one where there are obviously movies that we failed
to
mention.
Well, sure. I mean, we're not going to talk about every movie.
Yeah. We hit the big ones, I think, and there are maybe a few others since we kind of wrapped it up sort of talking about the Roland Emmerich and Dean Devlin era.
There was some criticism of our proposed Hungry Hungry Hippos movie.
Well,
but I don't have, I don't know that I could adequately explain or synopsize, if I can make up a word.
Is that a made up word? Synopsize?
Does it exist?
Let's pretend that it does.
The proposed Hungry Hippos movies that we heard from a listener. You know, I was okay with our...
I liked it.
Ours, but you know, we can't please everyone. And that person wants to step forward and, you know, put their own
They can start their own podcast.
Yeah. They're welcome to do so. So that's, I think that's the only thing I could think of.
Yeah.
For blockbusters.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah.
Addendumed.
Chukunk Chang Chung.
You know, for this next one, road trips.
Mm-hmm. We got some additional audio on that. That maybe.
We could maybe drop in.
Yeah, we'll maybe throw that in the show notes.
What was the audio?
Well, on episode 34, road trips, we took a road trip and we went to the 1984 arcade in Springfield, Missouri. And we actually, while we were there, we spent a little bit of time interviewing one of the guys. I think his name was John. I think or Matt.
Chris?
God, I'm a jerk.
You are a jerk.
I think it's on the recording. Let's hope so.
So
we have some additional audio from that talking about kind of the origins of 1984. And I mean, they were all just really good guys, and we really liked that place. So we're going to throw that up.
Yeah, they were extremely welcoming, too.
Yeah.
You know, and we are just two dudes.
Yeah. Who basically just sort of walked in with microphones and we said, hey, we're going to sit over here and talk.
We are not like a major podcast or establishment. We just, you know, they were very welcoming and were happy to talk to us. Yeah. And the guy we talked to had some really interesting things to say about the arcade and stuff. So we should put that.
Yeah.
We could put it in the show notes, and maybe we'll drop a little clip in to the show itself.
Sure.
But in general, you know, I just want to say that was a fun episode to do. We took the studio out of the studio. I mean, we went on the road with it, you know? Maybe that'll become an annual...
Oh, a tradition. I like that.
The annual archive road trip.
I like it.
But it was a lot of fun, you know?
Yeah. That was a good day.
Some unconventional episodes in this run.
Yeah. Yeah. We kind of got a little experimental.
Which I like.
I do too.
Which I like.
I do too. Break it up. Say it again. Say it again.
Which I like. Addendum. This one. I don't have any notes for this one other than, man, it's one of my favorites.
It is.
Summer refreshments?
Yeah. Yeah, this was part of the summer series, and we talked about...
I mean, did this... This didn't kick off the summer series, did it?
No.
Summer blockbusters?
We talked about summer vacation in a previous addendum.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so this was continuing.
We were deep into the summer series at this point.
Yeah. These were the dog days of the dog days of the summer series.
I that's one of my favorite episodes. But yeah, I have nothing. No,
we did. I will admit, no, I got called out on my my flavor ice eating pattern.
And we kept saying flavo ice, and that's my fault because I in the discussion initially referred to it as such.
Mm-hmm.
Is it flavor ice?
Yeah,
it's flavor ice.
Maybe.
And I think I kept calling it flavo ice. Maybe I'm not totally wrong. I mean, there might be a brand of this stuff that is FLAVO-ICE.
It's possible.
There's another brand name for them.
Oh, there's probably a bunch. Yeah. Because, I mean, all it is syrup and ice. Yeah, right?
But you got in trouble.
Yeah.
Who called you out?
I can't remember now.
But someone was like, you don't know how to eat those?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your method's wrong.
You have a weird method.
All right. Maybe I do. I knew going into that discussion that I was going to probably take some heat on that. But and if you don't know what I'm talking about, you can go back and listen to it.
We're not going to read this like there's a script here or something. Just go listen to it if you don't know what we're talking about. So that's addendumed.
All right.
Do we have nothing else right to add to that?
Nope.
We're continuing with the experimental stuff, right?
Yeah. 36. That
Summer
was a good one.
Mixtape 2012. Mm-hmm. That was a cool one.
Yeah, I enjoyed that one a lot. I don't know if anybody else did.
Yeah, I mean, don't either.
I don't know if people liked it or not. I know people maybe it was a weird one, and I understand that.
I got a lot out of it.
Yeah. That was a bit self-fulfilling, I guess.
We're going to do it again.
Yeah.
That so, won't be the last mixtape.
If you don't like the mixtapes.
So
you can,
what?
You can take a week off. Yeah. So what?
I'm a little aggressive to our listeners today.
Yeah.
I apologize for that. All right. So I was not.
Here we go.
I was a little disappointed in myself.
Because, related to this next one?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I listened back to the Ninja Turtle episode. That's what we're talking about, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I felt like I never talked about the joy, the fun of it all, of the Ninja Turtles. And we didn't talk about the turtles.
Oh, right. Yeah.
You know, I think we're going to do another Turtles episode. And if you're sick of it, I'm sorry. But I guess I hold it to a very high standard. So I want to make sure we do it right. But I think we'll do another episode where we'll talk about the turtles themselves and maybe the characters in general. Mm-hmm. Because I think what that episode ended up being was more discussion of the impact the turtles
the culture,
had.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. Which wasn't bad. I should say I did enjoy listening to it and doing the episode, but I want to go deeper. But we have some, I lost my notes. We have some, listener response on this one that was pretty great. And I'm trying to see if I can pull it up here because I lost it. Here we go. Nick, he noted that I was trying to summon the creator of Usagi Yojimbo in my mind, mm-hmm. and he helped us out. Stan Sakai was the creator of that character that crossed over. He also notes that Krang the alien, mm-hmm. was indeed in the comics. I think those are all Nick's comments. I think he put forth the theory because we talked about what are the Ninja Turtles' music tastes, tastes are. He puts forth that Leonardo only listens to the radio and can't remember any of the band's names.
That which is a very good theory. I agree. Like, I can definitely see that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He asks how we made it through the discussion about cartoons being advertisements for toys without mentioning its Zenith Pokemon, gotta catch them all.
It's a good point. It's a good point. Yeah. I think that was sort of almost taking it to a new level. It's hard for me. See, even though I can acknowledge, like I can go back and watch the Turtles or watch Masters of the Universe now, and I can see how they were, you know, sort of commercials, basically. Mm-hmm. But even now, I guess if I watch them, I still sort of fall back into like a 5-year-old mindset, mm-hmm. and I just sort of go with the flow. So it's hard for me. Like I was pretty cynical by the time Pokemon had come around, so I don't view them in the same way.
You know? I actually kind of give Pokemon a bit more credence, to be honest. As I mean, yes, it's an advertisement.
Yeah.
As much as every cartoon,
sure,
is an advertisement for its toys.
Yeah.
But I think Pokemon was simply an extension of, you know, another medium through which to tell that story. Mm-hmm. You know, the video game, the cartoon, the cards. These are all ways to, yes, in the end, make money, but also another way to simply tell the story of Pokemon.
Now that we're talking about it, it's like I do sort of want to give it more credit because it's an interesting, it's like a gamification of a narrative series.
Yeah,
you know, like what a weird idea to try.
It was a game first,
right? But I mean, like. It's the kind of thing where you look at that game and you're like, there's no way you could make a TV series out of that game. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't.
You might think that, yeah.
Yeah, like the same type of thing with like Street Fighter, you know,
right.
or
no
Mortal Kombat.
Effectively, you know? Made those.
Exactly. But I mean, so it sort of was yeah. was a very ballsy move to try to
yeah.
to make a series out of it, and I think that they did a pretty good job.
Yeah, they were very successful.
Arguably, I can't believe I'm defending Pokemon.
You know, maybe we should do a Pokemon episode.
God, I hope not.
We might.
I do have
There's
stories.
There's a lot of good things about Pokemon.
I have stories, man.
Sounds like you've got some personal issues with Pokemon.
I do.
We're going to have to do an episode. Right. Nick provided some links to some cool Ninja Turtle stuff we'll put in the show notes. Mm-hmm. One of them is a movie, an independent movie about Casey Jones.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then he, later in a discussion... He says he played with the toys long after he should have. long after he should have been playing with toys in general, he says. He'd come home after watching movies when he was in middle school and do parodies of them with the toys.
Nice.
And he painted the toys. He painted over one of the turtles' headbands and named him Van Gogh.
Thank you, Nick.
His own That's turtle, awesome. Like his own character.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I did a similar thing. I never painted any of my action figures, but I came up with my own Ninja Turtle.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember asking my dad... for the name of a Renaissance artist, because I didn't know any, and he said it was something that started with a K. It was like Keishin or Keysun or,
huh.
So that was the name of my Ninja Turtle, and he wore a white bandana.
Oh.
And I don't remember what his weapons were. And Nick, I think I asked him, but he didn't remember what the color that he painted over. Mm-hmm. His Ninja Turtle was, but it's pretty great.
That is good. That is very good.
The new show debuted.
Oh, the Nickelodeon one?
Yeah, September. And I saw the first episode, and I have to say, I think that I like the spirit of it. You know, mm-hmm. it's definitely in line with the first cartoon that came out in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
More sort of fun slapstick mixed with action. It's got a lot of anime trappings. It's not really, and this is not a criticism, but it is not really geared towards the, you know, original fans of that show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think they made it hoping that
they're not doing fan service.
Well, not so. I don't think they made it thinking we want to pull in both the original fans mm-hmm. and new fans. You know, I think they're focusing primarily solely on new fans, you know, and I'm fine with that.
Sure. I can't fault
And I think for that purpose, the show is pretty good.
Do you know how it's doing? Like, is it popular at all?
You know, I haven't looked into it. I wonder.
Be curious to find that out. Like,
yeah.
How it plays.
But it had I think it's got a good voice cast. It's got the animation's really good. I think the style is nice. It's got I think it's unique.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a I am glad that it's more easygoing. Hmm. The later previous iterations on the Turtles have become grittier and grittier. And while I appreciate that that's the roots of the you know
series,
Turtles.
Yeah.
I do prefer the more lighthearted kind of touch.
Mm-hmm.
So that's as far as we'll go for now.
All right.
But I think we'll do another
one.
To
be continued.
Yeah, yeah. The next run of shows is just going to be sequels.
Remakes.
All right. Addendums. What's next?
Well, my friend... after Ninja Turtles, we talked a little bit about carnivals and fairs.
Yeah, I didn't have anything to add to this.
No, although there, I think we may have confused the topic of fried, or I may have confused you on the topic of fried butter.
Oh no!
Because I think what I said it? That it was still there was still some sort of gooey center to the fried butter. And then I watched a whole bunch of videos on fried butter, and all of them were like explicit in saying how the butter melted completely into the thing. Like there's a whole bunch of reviews you can find on YouTube, people actually eating fried butter on a stick and being just, like, look, there's no butter. It's all melted into the thing. And I was like, no, no, trust me. There's still some butter inside.
Yeah. Yeah.
To sort of,
and so my, and not to go back into this, but I had two problems with the fried butter concept. The first being, if it's butter that is not whole, you know, if the butter isn't melted all the way, that's disgusting.
Right.
And if it is melted all the way, it's not fried buttered. It's buttered batter.
Yeah. Okay.
So in the end, it's buttered batter.
Yes. Yeah.
You're not frying the buttered batter, right?
Well, I mean, technically you are, but...
But the butter is simply being melted.
In a fryer.
Yeah.
Wrapped in batter.
Right, right.
All right, addendumed.
Is Ghosts next?
Yeah, Ghosts is next.
This was an unofficial precursor to Awesome Spooky Month.
Yeah,
Did we even mention in the episode?
We don't.
I think we kind of both agreed, you know, outside the episode, this would be a primer. In a way.
Yeah, an unofficial primer.
Yeah, but we were creeping up on the season, so I think we're going to get people interested.
Yeah.
And I have a note here from a listener whose name is Nathan. And it's kind of long, so I apologize. But he says, I believe in Amityville it was a lamp that was the problem. I love how that one ended too, with them simply tossing it out a window. I can almost picture the ghost standing or floating over the lamp, broken lamp, staring up at the attic window, shaking its fist. Also, I believe it's impossible to haunt a cup, as I believe haunting it requires being inside of it or its designated borders, sort of like your old haunts are places you hung out. I believe you could curse a cup, but not haunt it. I guess a ghost, maybe a nostalgic father, might have had a number one dad mug that he was really proud of. And somehow that mug could get lost or stolen, and the ghost dad might get really peeved. I could see him haunting the place the mug ends up in, like if it went to someone who was obviously not even a number two dad. But he couldn't really be haunting the mug. You could say if he is tied to the mug is cursed, sort of a poor man's curse, whether that the fancy or elaborate spells or enchantments. Or if it gets crazy, I guess the ghost could possess the mug, but that might be pretty lame. I hope this helps.
That's a pretty awesome response.
This is the stuff we want.
Right, that's exactly what we want.
Prime example.
He's right. About the Amityville thing, in that there was an Amityville movie with a cursed lamp.
Oh, man.
There was also an Amityville movie with a cursed clock, grandfather clock, a cursed mirror, a dollhouse.
All right.
And then I think there was maybe one other. There have been about a dozen Amityville movies.
There you go.
And, so I don't see why, like, there could conceivably be an Amityville movie involving a cup. Like a haunted mug or something.
Yeah.
A cursed mug. Yeah. He's right, though. It would have been kind of lame. Yeah.
We didn't talk about the ghost of the most.
Oh, good point. Yeah.
Beetlejuice. Which is an exceptional film.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, apparently my sister and I found it at the video store.
Oh, so you didn't know anything about it?
Yeah, my parents didn't know anything about it, and they rented it for us. No clue as to what it was. Mm-hmm. And I think after the third or fourth time of us renting it and watching it, they finally sort of sat down to watch it with us. Mm-hmm. And
they were like, my God, what have we done?
Everyone, you know, the whole family loved the movie. Uh-huh. It's a great movie.
It is a good, it's a cross-generational movie.
Michael
yeah.
Keaton.
Yeah.
At his best.
Yeah. Prime Keaton.
Yeah. Prime Keaton era right there. Oh, I wish we could have Keaton back.
I do too, man. I wish we could have Michael Keaton, Prime Keaton, and pre-serious Tom Hanks. Like back when he was like batty Tom Hanks, like he would kind of flap his head back and forth and get really agitated and talk like that.
He and Tom Hanks is like that when he's just being Tom Hanks now.
Yeah.
But he's not like that in any of his movies.
He doesn't do movie roles like that. Yeah. I want that Tom Hanks back.
Well, maybe we shouldn't talk about it because I think you already have a negative opinion of it. But in Cloud Atlas, he does some weird stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting.
All right.
But
Beetlejuice, great movie.
And I bet we
good
come back to it at some
too.
Point.
I remember liking the cartoon a lot
for a while.
Uh huh. I had a big crush on Lydia.
Yeah,
Winona Ryder. Yeah.
I like that movie a lot. Quoted quite a bit in my family.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
lots of quotes from
Deo.
Beetlejuice. Daylight, come and me one go home. Day.
Me said day, me said day, me said day.
Daylight, come and me one go home. Work all night and a drink a rum.
Daylight, come and me one go home.
Stack banana till the morning come.
Daylight come and me one go home.
Come Mr. Tallyman, tally me banana.
Daylight come and me one go home.
Come Mr. Tallyman, tally me banana.
Daylight come and me one go home.
Live
6 foot, 7 foot, 8 foot bunch.
Daylight come and
7 foot, 8 foot bunch.
Daylight come and me one go home.
Also, are you doing this? Work all night and a drink a rum.
That was good.
Thanks.
So Ghosts Addendum, do you got anything else?
Yeah, we probably will. I don't have anything right now, but I mean, Ghosts is a pretty fertile topic. So,
well, any spooky topic, look, it just expect us to come back to it.
Probably.
The next one was part of our still unfinished.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we need to do one more for this year. Retrospectacular, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Is that what we called it?
The Retrospectacular.
Yeah. 1982. Yeah.
We did an episode about Blade Runner.
And it was your first time ever seeing it.
Right. And it had this strange effect on me to where as I was watching it, I hated it. and when that final scene with Rucker Hauer played, I was like, wow. And then as time passed, the more I thought about it, the more I liked the movie. And now I'm kind of like, man, that was a great movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think you may remember in the episode, I commented on how much I disliked the soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
And that's changed as well. And I found myself looking up soundtrack.
Now you've got it like on vinyl.
Yeah, the score.
And
no, well, no.
8-track, yeah.
But I was trying to find tracks on YouTube just to hear.
Yeah.
It was good stuff. But I wanted to note that final scene by Rutger Hauer was somewhat improvised.
That's killer.
Did you know this?
I didn't, no.
Apparently the soliloquy was much longer.
Huh.
And he, I think, without telling anyone or maybe on the spot, kind of just cut it, edited it down, you know?
Uh-huh.
And tweaked a few wording here and there and kind of delivered what, you know, you eventually see.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just incredible.
You think, like, he cut it down and then he did his death thing or whatever, and Ridley Scott's just like, Rutger, you have to read the rest of it. What's the rest of it?
And he didn't.
Yeah, he just
he
sat
refused,
there.
He refused, yeah.
Dead, yeah.
It's the only take he can use.
God damn it. Cut. He's British, right, Ridley Scott?
Probably.
Yeah.
If not, he probably sounds British.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing we should talk about is the alternate ending. The alternate ending.
The alternate.
There's
alternate
like 12
ending.
Endings.
Yeah, well, sure. It's
but there's one the that's particularly on despicable.
Which one?
It's an ending where after Deckard is, you know, gone into that elevator and the elevator shuts.
Right.
We cut to.
Oh, okay, so we're talking about the original ending with. Where they're
is
out.
This the yeah.
When they get away, they're driving in like this
the
sunny
hills.
Hillside, yeah,
and they're happy.
Oh God, and yeah, their exchange is so horrible.
And like, but what makes it incredibly bad is I think she says it. What's her name? Rachel.
Yeah, Rachel
says something like, "We were made for each other."
Yeah.
And if you don't catch the subtle play on words there,
yeah,
it sort of, and maybe for a lot of people, it confirms that both of them are indeed replicants.
I guess, although I feel like there are some people who like would need them to be like. You know, like she would need to say, "I'm glad that Terrell Corporation manufactured our robotic parts
for each other."
Yeah,
and then they would both have to like open up their skin
right.
and reveal the robotic inner workings. Yeah,
yeah.
But it's a bad
terrible,
ending, and it's good that it didn't get used.
Yeah. So I think we talked a little bit about the different cuts, and I want to affirm that I think that the final cut is pretty rad.
Like, that's what I watched.
Having watched it a couple of times now in different iterations, I think the final cut's pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty solid.
Yeah. Addendumed. Magic.
Yeah.
I believe is next. I have one note.
All right.
And I don't even know how to get into it. But I think listener Eric mentioned it maybe in the comments.
Mm-hmm.
And I apologize if I attributed that incorrectly. But he asked why we didn't mention Doug Henning. Do you know who Doug Henning is?
Yes.
He's a magician guy from the 70s.
Sounds about right. Yeah.
Yeah. Just Google Doug Henning.
Yeah.
Watch a few videos. He's kind of a weird dude.
I did have another note on that, that this didn't come up, but actually I have a friend who has performed at the Magic Castle.
What?
We talk about, well, sort of. She apprentices at the Magic Castle.
Okay.
And what that means is, I guess, you know, she sort of prepares props and things or whatever for the person who is appearing. And then as kind of a schooling exercise, they will allow you to, like, perform backstage for other magicians or whatever. It's sort of, you know, it's like a training vehicle or whatever. So she's done that, and
she can't tell you anything about it, can she?
No. But if we're ever out there,
she can get us
in. She can probably get us in.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow, cool.
Yeah.
Addendumed. We've got quite a few notes about concept and double albums.
Yeah, man. And I knew, like, almost immediately after finished recording that, like, man, we should have said something about. I think the most outrageous one that we got called on was the omission of the Who's Tommy, which I think you point out in an exchange in the comments on that episode that neither one of us is particularly familiar with Tommy.
Yeah,
I mean, I've seen it, but I don't think about it.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I understand in the pantheon of concept albums,
right.
It is almost at the top, if
right.
not at the very top. So
I've never heard it.
It was something we should have at least acknowledged.
Sorry.
So yes, we apologize.
But we're not going to talk about it because we don't know
anything
about it. No,
because I don't
care. But yeah, I think it was both Nick, listener Nick, and listener my mom pointed out that these things that we did not mention the Who. And Nick also gave us a few links to what I can only assume are concept albums.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool.
Dark Night of the Soul, he mentioned.
Yeah,
I am familiar with that, and he's great. He's right, it is a great That is a great album.
And something called Colonel Jeffrey Pumpernickel.
Which I am not familiar with that. So I look forward to checking that out.
Also something called Dr. Octagon.
Yeah.
So look, these things sounded pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And we'll put links in the show notes. And then also a listener, my mom, mentioned that jazz is the originator of concept albums. It's the genre of jazz. So look, Pink Floyd didn't make up concept albums. I think we said that.
Yeah. I think we did sort of put the majority of the origin in the hands of the Beatles, which I think we knew even at that time that that was probably wrong, but
yeah, sorry.
I think what we meant was that
popularized it.
Yes, the concept album as it has come to be known.
Yeah, yeah.
I think most people attribute to the Beatles.
One thing I want to note I don't think we really talked about Dark Side of the Moon.
No, that's another.
And I think what's one of the interesting things about Dark Side of the Moon, and I know this probably isn't the most interesting thing, but it's a thing that most people maybe have heard of, is that it has a strange sort of synchronization with The Wizard of Oz.
That's right.
If you started at a particular moment, I believe, on the second lion's roar of the MGM logo or whatever, if you start the album, there are some really odd little...
Lyrically, it seems to coincide with musically.
For instance, at the beginning, when Dorothy is kind of walking on the fence between the pigsty and somewhere else, there's a strange link up for when she falls in. The music kind of shifts in a weird way. I think the most arresting one that I... because I watched a good chunk of it just to... you can find it on YouTube, the two synced up. The most arresting one is when the witch first appears, and not as the witch, but in the Kansas portion of the movie, when the woman who
wants to kill Toto.
Yeah. When she first appears, that's when the bells all toll.
Mm-hmm.
In Dark Side of the Moon, there's this moment where all these bells are going off. The clocks are all going off. Their alarms and stuff. And their bells. And it's like right when the scene cuts, like right when she appears, these bells.
That's when they start.
And it's really freaky. Hmm. Then I think one of the most notable ones that people talk about a lot is when Dorothy opens the door after landing in Oz and it turns to color, that's when the song Money starts and you hear cash registers and stuff like that.
Hmm.
So it's pretty cool. It's an interesting, you can find it on YouTube. If you just Google Dark Side of the Rainbow, you can probably find one or two different versions of the movie synced with that album. And it's an interesting experience.
So give it a shot.
That's it. That's all I have.
All right.
For this episode. It was a good episode. I enjoyed that one a lot.
I liked it too.
Even though we apparently missed everything.
Yeah.
I think this takes us into Awesome Spooky Month.
Spooky Month, I think we are.
Urban Legends was our starter.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have any notes.
There's a lot of ground there. I mean, there are just a lot of urban legends that, you know, you could talk about. And we didn't really go into, we sort of alluded to them, but we didn't really go into the sort of grosser ones about, like, the spider eggs.
Yeah,
we were
going for a particular tone.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, there are certainly urban legends that aren't necessarily spooky. They're just gross.
Yes.
So spiders' eggs and
we didn't talk about the kidney one, did we?
No,
like which is the person goes to a party or a club or something and
wakes up
in a pool of ice or a bathtub full of ice, and then they see a note that says, "Hey, sorry, we took your kidney." Yeah, I mean, it's a weird. They all have that sort of weird cautionary bent like, to them, and I guess that one is like, yeah, don't ever socialize.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I think we endorse that anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Smart
stay in
mode of life. Yeah, yeah. Listen to the podcast. But yeah, that, I don't have anything else more on that one.
Yeah, so addendumed.
So we'll addendum that.
Haunted attractions.
Mm-hmm.
Do we got anything else on this one?
Not particularly. I don't think there were any corrections that came
through. Did we forget
anything? We did get a link, though. I think Nick actually shared a link. There's a great, I think it's called the Nightmare Factory.
Oh.
Maybe in Pennsylvania. Oh. I'm not sure. But they've been around for a while. And every year now, for at least the last couple, they do this great thing where they snap a picture at a pivotal moment.
Oh, yes.
In the attraction,
yes.
Where something really scary happens.
Yeah.
And then they post on this blog all of the photos of people captured mid-scare.
Yeah, pretty great.
And some of them are just absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
So there's the one that circulated a lot this year is just dudes getting scared.
Yeah.
And it's like all this collection of guys going through the place and getting freaked out. So
excellent.
We'll drop that.
Excellent. Yeah. Excellent. 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 Awesome. Addendumed. Next we have the Monster Movie Party. And I just, you know, we alluded to it, but never got into it. Our friend Nathan,
yeah,
has a party that has just happened. I mean, as on the day that we're recording this, we're recording it the day after,
yeah,
the party in question occurred. So
it's really party almost doesn't do it justice.
Yeah, why don't you go ahead and describe it?
Well, he. It's centered around movie watching,
yeah.
Right? But it's done on such a scale that the movies are almost secondary to
the experience.
Yeah, yeah, it's an experience. It's,
yeah,
it's an experience. So,
so what he's done is he's collected over 150 movies.
Yeah,
right.
Most of them
not good
direct to video quality.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
All and for the most part falling under the category of horror, thriller, suspense,
yeah,
sort of Halloween-esque films. He has ranked them in order from, you know, as in, you know, quality, good.
Right. Expected quality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good to bad.
Mm-hmm.
And over the course of 3 days,
mm-hmm,
invites people to come and watch these movies. The way the movies are selected, the movies that will be watched, the way they are selected is through a random system that spits out a number, right? Between,
mm-hmm,
1 and, you know, 160 or whatever, however many movies there are.
Right.
And whichever movie you've randomly drawn is the one that is going to be watched. But there's another element. Why don't you describe what happens when you do pick a movie?
Well, your corresponding movie is located in Nathan's basement.
Yes.
But you don't know where
No. It's
located in Nathan's basement.
And, right.
And it's your duty to retrieve the movie.
Mm-hmm.
From the basement,
yeah,
which has been transformed into a nightmarish
maze
of fog and random Halloween props
in a really effective way.
Yes, yes, it's
pretty incredible what can be done with trash bags and
yeah,
and fog.
Yeah.
Because it is, I mean, okay, I have admitted freely on this podcast that I get scared easily. I get creeped out very easily because of my overactive imagination. And when you're in this maze that is filled with fog and that you can't see anything because the lights are out, And, you know, there's a little bit of light from various sources, but the light does nothing because of the fog obscures everything that you can, negligible. That's illuminated. Not only is that happening, but there's also music, scary music being blared into the basement. So stuff like, the Friday the 13th soundtrack or Exorcist soundtrack, like just various creepy sounds. And you have to make your way through this maze and then find the movie and then get your, find your way out,
make your way back. Yeah.
Which is pretty difficult. But you know, it's a weekend long thing. I mean, and you are the movies don't stop.
Nope.
There's no stopping to go to bed. I mean, people sleep.
Sure.
Because they literally cannot stay awake. But
in some cases that's induced by the movies.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But the, you know, several people strive to stay there for the entire weekend. Mm-hmm. And it's an impressive feat. Just the orchestration overall.
The level of execution is unlike anything I've ever seen.
Yeah, absolutely. So good, hats off and kudos and addendum, right? So I think, what do we got?
We got two more. We got our discourse on trick-or-treating customs.
Yeah, yeah. So we talked about joke telling.
Yeah.
And we had some research done for us by listener Ashley, who looked up the source of the genesis.
Yeah, how it got started.
Joke telling. And it is a regional thing. St. Louis is one of the only places that does this.
Yeah.
However, I believe it originated in Iowa.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And she sent some links along, so we'll have to find those again. But yeah, apparently it befuddles.
It's pretty weird.
Those who come to this city as transplants, and Halloween rolls around, and they have kids trying to tell them jokes. And you know, I think it's a great thing. I mean, I would think, you know, if I were from another place and I came here and like kids are telling me Halloween jokes.
Yeah, oh,
like,
yeah.
What a great
tradition.
That would
add some additional charm.
Right?
However, if you're a kid and you're not used to telling jokes when you go to trick-or-treating...
That's beside the point.
Then maybe not so great.
Yeah, well, learn. You know.
So I heard a great joke.
Okay.
This particular Halloween, this most recent Halloween. And it starts off... I'm gonna relay it in the exact way in which it was relayed to me by like an 8-year-old in a zombie costume.
Okay.
And so she says, "There's a ninja, and he goes to Burger King. What does he order?" And at this point, she doesn't allow you the time to answer.
What?
She immediately responds with a whoopah.
I like that she makes sure that the pace of the joke remains at what she wants. You know,
oh,
she doesn't,
she's in total control of that.
You're
joke.
Not part of the joke.
Yeah, yeah.
You are
this
being
is her
performed
stage.
For.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. I went trick or treating with my niece and nephews, and it was a lot of fun. And they had their jokes to tell, but one thing I noted about my nephews in particular, who are twin boys, when they would tell the joke, and then when it came time for the punchline, they were clearly sort of done being at the house, because they would either start the punchline and then walk away as they finished, or just walk away and kind of throw the punchline out as they left. So the formality, or the joke was merely a formality for them.
You know what? The rules are just
You
tell a joke.
Yes.
It doesn't have to...
The funny thing was, I mean, they really wanted to get these jokes out, but I think they just didn't have the patience
to stand there on the porch any longer.
One moment that was actually pretty great and something that I could really relate to from that night, we were walking, you know, from house to house, and these couple of kids were coming toward us, and my brother, upon seeing one of the kids' costumes, said, "Hey, I know what that is. That's a Minecraft costume." And this kid, he goes, "Yes! Finally, somebody gets it!" And I was like, and I've been that kid
before,
you know, where no one knew what my costume was, and I was the only one who really got it. And so it was pretty funny to see that happen from the other, you know, side of the coin there.
Yeah.
But he, my brother, made that kid's night. He was so excited that someone knew what he was. So yeah, trick or treating.
Trick or treating.
Addendumed.
For now.
So the last episode, another experimental one, and I'm really pleased with the results myself. And
yeah, I don't know how it played for anybody else, but
I apologize if that was not, so the Scary Stories episode, mm-hmm. you know, we referenced the book Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark in the first
in Urban Legends. Yeah.
Yeah. The awesome Spooky Month episode. And then we just had a live reading with an audience. I had a great time.
It was fun. Yeah. I think
really liked that episode.
Yeah.
I'm sorry if that was really annoying.
I do think it's interesting that we haven't received like any feedback on that one.
I've received some, you know, honorary archivist. I mean, not honorary. I mean, he is, if you think about it, on staff, Jeff Wilson.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Our awesome music maker.
Yeah.
The man, the
went
genius.
Went above and beyond the call of duty for Awesome Spooky Month, we should point out.
Yeah, the genius behind the intro and outro music, both the normal intro and outro music and the special custom Awesome Spooky Month, which is just great.
Masterpiece.
So many thanks to Jeff for that, but he said that he really enjoyed that episode.
Oh, good, good.
And you know, he knows none of those people in that episode. Yeah. So I'm glad. So maybe there's hope. You know, maybe.
Good.
But I think we'll do another live one at some point. Yeah. I thought that was a lot of fun.
Yeah,
added a different kind of spin to things. But you know, it's funny. I don't remember those scary stories being so kind of simplistically written.
I do.
Maybe I'm attributing the sophistication of the illustrations to the writing, you know?
Maybe
I was like, the illustrations were so kind of vivid in my mind that I was like, oh my gosh, the writing must have been
equally complex.
Yeah, and it wasn't.
No, but I think it's appropriate for the material.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's it.
That's it. I mean,
this round.
And that was, you know, a 17 episode run. But the next one, so here's the question. Are we going to do the next 13 episodes in addendums to get us back on track?
Yeah, I think we'll float back to the regular schedule.
So you'll get an addendums episode early.
A little early.
But then we'll be back into the flow of things. But let's reiterate, let us know if you got stuff that we missed.
Call us out.
We got wrong. Call us out. And we might be defensive about it. But we will note it.
And put it in the archive.
And it is welcome. And you're welcome. For 17 episodes of fun. Let's put these addendums in the archive, John.
machine. That's a fact.